The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hating the U.S. in a big way, apparently. The Europeans that have come over are just obsessed with our American culture. Have you been watching this? Take a look at this. This fan shared his first 1 a.m. Waffle House experience, rating it a 10 out of 10. We'll be coming back. Another fan discovering Big Gulps, writing, not going to lie, Big Gulps from 7-Eleven are easily one of my favorite things I've discovered in America so far. Yes, sir, they are.
I wondered that, fellas. How are so many of them here? Don't they have to work?
Yeah, well, they've got so little, Will. I mean, the soccer thing is basically it. And they've, you know, many of them have ruined their own economies and their own open border policies. I love the fact that they're in America enjoying it. They have to have a tinge of regret when they see the greatness of America and knowing that they had some components of that before they destroyed it with their own policies. But yeah, man, it's a fun time. It looks like a good party almost at all of these cities.
Sports is truly the fabric of America. It is the ultimate uniter.
World Cup fans love America. Morgan, tourists from Europe and Asia, are discovering American culture and falling in love with places like Waffle House, Walmart, In-N-Out Burger, our biscuits and gravy, and giant portions of food that they don't get in their tiny little forgotten countries. Because their food sucks and everything is small and warm, let's be honest.
How much do you love seeing these foreigners come to the World Cup and rave about the things that Americans take for granted?
Even the fact that Walmart, we should now refer to it as a museum from now on, right?
Joe, are you surprised? I mean, flyovers, Big Gulps, like we got it all. Air conditioning. Why wouldn't they love it?
We are living in the greatest country in the world, the most wealthy country in the world, and the most fun country in the world. It's no argument. That's not an opinion. That's a stone cold fact, Aisha.
And how good does it feel? You got the Knicks. You got the World Cup. We just had the men's hockey. You got UFC at the White House. This is such a good run that this country's on. Isn't it fun to celebrate with Europeans, the Japanese?
Yes.
It definitely feels like something's changing. Do you feel it?
I do.
A Boston police officer threw on a Scottish jersey, and the fans just went wild. Let's watch it here. I love it. I love it. And we're seeing this all over the country.
Has it been a tough couple of months? Absolutely. Some divisiveness, some things to be concerned about on the right. Absolutely. But again, when you go back to sports, and there's no other country that does it like we do with the diversity of sports, look at how people were crying when the Knicks won for the first time since 1973, right? Black, white, green, Asian, doesn't matter. You're a Knicks fan. The miracle actually happened.
You can burn school buses together. Black, white, we can all burn school buses.
I know. Yes, let's all do it together. I'm just so happy.
I am loving that the World Cup has brought to our shores all these people who are doing Americans the service of reminding us, just when we needed it on our big 250 birthday, that actually this place is kind of awesome.
It was comical. It was sad. There's parts about it to celebrate. The United States has been hosting the World Cup soccer tournament along with host nations Canada and Mexico. But a lot of people coming to America, seeing it for the first time and recounting their stories of really how blessed the United States is, the blessings of Abraham. And that comes through in that montage. I mean, we have prosperity here in the United States, as no nation in history has experienced. But you look at, again, it just in that montage, what they're celebrating. I mean, it's embarrassing that it's like, well, American culture is oversized meals and sugary drinks and just as much sports as you can possibly have. I think it was the former ESPN commentator there, Sage Steele, that said sports is the fabric of America. Jesse Waters, we're on such a good run. It feels like things are getting better. The Europeans are coming over and seeing that, well, the Americans aren't so bad. We have it so good over here because we've got Walmart and we just have so much stuff. Nothing about morality, nothing about God, nothing about repentance, nothing about turning the nation. A lot of articles about these Europeans that are coming over and seeing the United States are calling them these modern-day de Tocquevilles, where he was that French philosopher who came to the United States in the 1830s and explained why this was a unique nation. We'll get to some of those quotes in a bit. But now you have these Europeans coming over in 2026 and saying, well, this is what makes America great, is the big gulp. Is this really what a righteous nation looks like? Again, there are good aspects to it, and we'll cover that on this show. America has been blessed, like I said, as no nation in history. But is this nation repenting? Is this nation really good, or is it good by man's definition of the word? And again, God describes that as just as filthy rags, Isaiah 64 and verse 6. I mean, by that montage, what is good is, well, just having the Waffle House, having the 3-8 or the big gulp whenever you want, unlimited refills. What about what God's definition of good is? What about God's definition of righteousness? Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston, your host for today's show. Follow us on Rumble, Trumpet Daily. You could type that in on rumble.com. You can do the same on YouTube. Leave us a comment on Rumble as well, or send your feedback to td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks again for joining us today. Just a couple stories that we're developing today. The Supreme Court issued two more opinions today. The first big one was that basically states can continue counting ballots that come in after Election Day. This was something that the RNC wanted to have banned. And then the Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett was the deciding vote there. And she sided with the liberals that the states make up these rules. They should be allowed to count them after Election Day. So that one didn't go as much in President Trump's favor. And then the one that did was that President Trump does have permission to fire independent government regulators or people who are hired by the executive branch of the government to really create regulations. These people that, I mean, have always just operated basically without congressional oversight and just make these rules by fiat. President Trump, who is the head of the executive branch, is allowed to fire them. But even within that opinion, there were still a lot of carve-outs that were like, well, he's not allowed to fire them if it's for this or this or this cause, which when it listed them off all seemed like things that people should be fired for within government. Drudge Report had the headline, Supremes Expand Presidential Power, and then a picture of President Trump as a king. And we call him King Jeroboam. That's how he's described in prophecy, and he's definitely taking on more of that king like power, but you've always got to balance that with, well, the radical left loves to destroy this country, so they go just totally out of bounds in their analysis. But then you also have to look at, well, as Mr. Stephen Fleury said, both sides are wrong. This is man's world, and you've got to get God's perspective. Like I said in the cold open, we've got to define good by God's law. Associated Press, America split from monarchy 250 years ago. Trump's presidency is testing how far it's come. They say with a deferential Republican-controlled Congress, courts have become the last check on Trump. The president has harshly criticized judges who have ruled against him, and his administration has sometimes defied their orders. Yet his quest to expand presidential power has been aided by the conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court, which has sided with Trump numerous times after lower court rulings hampered him. And just seeing all of these cases and these opinions get announced, it does bring to mind Mr. Fleury's article, "Is America's Supreme Court in Bible Prophecy?" And he talks about how this court is, you can go through in Amos 7, it talks about the king's court, and it's actually meaning the kingdom's court, or it belongs to the people. And he said in January 2019, this was after Kavanaugh was finally approved, that this court favors President Trump, but it's not beholden to him, it's not under him. And you see that in a lot of these cases. On one hand, they will give him a huge victory, on another hand, it's a big loss. Mr. Fleury said, "I believe this non-religious entity, the kingdom's house, is referring to the United States Supreme Court. This court was designed to guard the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. In many ways, the Supreme Court is over the whole nation. Even the president is subject to it, which is exactly the type of entity that the house of the kingdom is referring to. I believe this prophetic account in Amos 7 implies that there is a conservative advantage in the Supreme Court, one that favors Jeroboam. The confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh could work to help fulfill this prophecy." Again, if you haven't gone through that article in a while, it's a great article to keep in mind when you watch these events. Getting back to the cold open there, this was an article at Fox Sports. "Internet falls in love with German soccer fan discovering America ahead of the 2026 World Cup." And this guy on Twitter, he's just been basically documenting his journey across the United States. And he's anonymous, but everybody loves this guy. He's showing how great America is. And America is great. It's very prosperous. We're a very blessed nation. But then you listen to those Fox hosts in that cold open, and boy, it's so shallow. Sports is the fabric of our country. What about going through this issue of the Trumpet magazine? You can go to that and download it at thetrumpet.com or subscribe and get it mailed to you. How America became great. What really should be the fabric of the United States? And we go through in that magazine. There is a lot to celebrate, not because of the people, but because of what God is working out here. America's been blessed like no nation in history. And Europe has been, they've got a lot of material blessings as well. I lived in England for a while, and you really, it wasn't like a huge difference. And there are little things, and there's the luxury items, but in many ways, we can be really materialistic in the United States. And there are some things, just cultural differences. But after living over there for a few years, I mean, you get used to it. But then you come to, I think I came to Florida. It was after 3 or 4 years, and I went to a Publix grocery store. And it was pretty shocking. It was astounding the amount of options you have in these stores in the United States. We have so much stuff, so much money. I mean, just driving even around Oklahoma City, the size of our homes in this country. I mean, we live in palaces. Of course, we have to be grateful for those things. We should be grateful for those. We should acknowledge them. We should take note of those things. It really helps this work, the blessings that Manasseh experiences, the material prosperity, having freedom of religion and freedom of speech, to get out a message, a warning message, in ways that really it couldn't go out in Europe. But these material blessings, they're not the result of our righteousness today. It's because of a promise that God made to Abraham. And we'll go through a bit of that. We'll play a segment from the documentary on the United States and Britain in prophecy. But you look at these, the World Cup, like Jesse Waters mentioned there, there was the U.S. winning the hockey at the Olympics. I mean, everybody's celebrating. It's America 250. And people kind of being lulled back into thinking, well, everything's fine. There's going to be a resurgence. It's America first, and you ignore really the rest of the world. I mean, you go over to the Iran war debacle that's playing out right now. And it's hard to keep up with all the little ins and outs of it because President Trump, it's one day this is the greatest war ever fought and we've got a peace deal that will bring eternal peace. And the next day we're going to resume bombing Iran. And it's just back and forth, not able to solve a problem, not being blessed in that sphere. But if we just focus on ourselves and if sports is the fabric of America and the New York Knicks have won and everybody's talking about how great American soccer is, we just get lulled back into sleep. Wall Street Journal. This is mind-boggling. When did having fun get so expensive? This summer when funflation went wild, and they talk about these sporting events and what people are paying to go to these events. Andrea Rojas and Carlos Ramon saved for more than a year for their trip to see the World Cup, but the married Virginia couple weren't prepared for the bill. Nearly $10,000 to travel to and see games in Boston, New Jersey, and Miami. So this is a couple from Virginia traveling within the United States. Journal says that was more than double what they paid for a similar trip to the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. So 12 years ago to get flights to travel to Brazil to see a soccer game. Tickets $800 a piece on FIFA's official resale site before the team schedules were announced. Game day parking, $175 at Gillette Stadium outside Boston, $150 outside Miami for parking, car rental, hotel, $100 commuter train tickets in New York City. I mean, it's just, it'll spend anything to watch a game. Mr. Fleury went through the Violent Delights article and just the big UFC event. I mean, it's the fabric of our nation now is sports. This journal article goes on. But so it goes in the modern era of high-end live entertainment where people are willing to spend vast pools of money and go into debt to attend once-in-a-lifetime events. And this really is, this is kind of how the end of a nation goes. When you look at past generations that didn't have access to the prosperity that we have, there was a lot more of, well, saving money, planning for the future, planning for retirement. And there's a lot of hopelessness now where a lot of these young people say, well, I'm never going to own a home. There's no point in saving for these things. It's just so expensive now. So I might as well just enjoy the moment. And then if you're to take that on, you know, to take it on just one more generation, well, that means, well, where's the money to take care of you when you're unable to work? You didn't save any money. There's no home. And it just turns into this welfare state, and you see it crumbling really all over the world. Japan and Europe, they're running out of money because the young workers aren't there. Too expensive to have a family. Everybody just living in the moment. The journal says, those at the top of the economic ladder spend lavishly without breaking a sweat. But such events are also drawing the working and middle classes who bust open savings and borrow money to afford spiraling prices. From the World Cup to the NBA Finals, which those tickets, I don't know if I read that. The average for those finals games in San Antonio, those were going for $4,000 a piece. In New York City, it was $9,000. From the World Cup to the NBA Finals to concerts by chart-topping artists such as Olivia Rodrigo and Harry Styles to boomer-friendly whatever, there seems to be no limit to what some are willing to pay. It concludes, for ardent fans, budgetary concerns are no match for the fear of missing out in a you-only-live-once economy. The you-only-live-once economy. Don't worry about the future. Don't worry about your children. They're too expensive to have anyway. Why bother? Live in the moment. I mean, these are things that mark the end of empires. Another article from the journal. European soccer fans marvel at the splendor of America's suburbs. And these are Europeans. They're just driving through an area around Kansas City. It says, along the way, this man and other European fans who flocked to Kansas City for the World Cup beheld the fruits of the American economy from a vantage point few foreign tourists typically see: suburban superstores, hulking plates of food, quiet streets. He marveled at the sprawling houses, a contrast from the tightly packed homes of the Netherlands. It's spacious, he said. You go here for shopping, there for your dentist. People are so rich here. I think that's why they can be so nice. And you see that, that thinking is all over the place. President Trump, J.D. Vance, Witkoff. If we have money, we'll all be righteous because we won't have to worry about anything, so we can all be friends and get along. In recent days, social media has been filled with videos of Europeans gawking at the staples of suburban American life: a two-car garage, a walk-in closet, a second refrigerator. Again, it's incredible prosperity, but does that make a nation righteous? Is that really the most important thing? And then you think about, well, this is what defines American culture, is a big refrigerator, a walk-in closet, a two-car garage. And then you've got President Trump, and he's out talking about, well, religion's hot, we're all turning to God, but then won't say, well, in what way? I'll get to those clips in a minute. This is a clip from an old Key of David program back in 2018, and Mr. Fleury's talking about Tocqueville and what he observed in his trip to the United States. And 1830s America is very different than, well, we're almost in the 2030s. That's hard to believe. 200 years later, you know, what the modern Tocquevilles are coming over and seeing versus what he saw back in the 1830s. This is, again, a Key of David program from 2018, clip 7.
Alexis de Tocqueville, a French historian, wrote about democracy in America. He mentioned that religion and morality were indispensable to the maintenance of the American Republic. Why indispensable? He said that while the constitutional law of liberty allowed Americans complete freedom to do as they please, religion prevented them from doing that which is immoral and unjust. In short, de Tocqueville surmised, liberty could not be governed apart from religious faith, lest there be anarchy. What could be more clear than that? If we don't have religious faith, we're going to have anarchy. And what comes after anarchy? Well, ancient Israel tells you, and it's very, very bad news in the short run. Again, see, he's echoing what George Washington taught about religion and morality. Today, if we were to talk about private morality and public duty, well, we'd say, well, those are separate issues. But George Washington would have been appalled by leaders saying that. You don't separate morality from public duty. You must not do that. These men, in fact, all of our founders, I think every single one of them were saying the same thing.
Later on, he talks about, well, there's this code, and you have to live by the code. And when there's morality, well, you have to define what that is. You can't just say God's name over and over again. You can't just say you're religious. Well, what do you do? How do you define what you're going to do? How do you prove it? Well, you've got to live by the Bible. You've got to do it the way God says to do it. What does the Bible say? What does the Bible say about the Sabbath? We've covered that for a lot since Charlie Kirk's assassination back in September of last year. Well, what does God say about this issue? What does God say about marriage? But you won't hear a politician saying, well, this is how we actually turn to God. There's a lot of cases in the Bible where righteous leaders stood up and did that. Think back to, well, you could go through Ezra and Nehemiah, where changes had to be made. There had to be repentance. It wasn't just celebrating the big gulp and celebrating the aisles at Walmart, as if that's what makes a nation righteous, as if that's a resurgence, a spiritual or moral resurgence. Here's President Trump. This was, I believe, on Friday. He was at the speaking at the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Mr. Palmer wrote about this in the Trumpet Brief this morning. But it's a lot of talk about God and religion. They had the weekend a couple months ago where they rededicated the nation to God that hardly anybody showed up for. If we just say it, but then what are you actually doing? Well, how do you define what you're doing or explain what to do? This is President Trump again on Friday, clip 4.
Been reading all of those reports. Religion's really, it's going up. If that were stuck, we'd be very, very rich, all of us. It's been great to watch. And as I've said before, to be a great nation, you have to have religion and you have to have God in your nation. If you don't have that, it just doesn't seem to work out, does it? And we have it. We have religion and we have God now.
He's right, but he's also so wrong. If we just have religion and God, that's right. You just need God. And then you've got to ask, okay, well, what does God teach? What is the creator? Why did he create us? It's just like anything. If there's a creator or any designer who builds something, they build it with a purpose. You could just pick any item and it comes with an instruction manual that explains how to use it or when there's a problem, how to fix the problem. God didn't just create man and then leave us. Okay, well, you acknowledge that there is God. That's better than the atheist. But what does God say to do? What's God's law? He created human beings. Is there a guidebook? Is there an instruction manual about how to live, how to be happy? Just talking about religion, I guess religion's back. And when you look at, you can read it online, The True History of God's True Church. Often this is a pretty big problem. Just when religion is resurgent and you just keep it in broad terms like that. We need true religion. We need to acknowledge what God says, what God's law is, what his instructions are. Not just, well, we've got religion and you just pick your flavor however you want to do it. Mr. Fleury writes in an article titled A Warning to America from Our Greatest Past Presidents. French historian Alexis de Tocqueville wrote, religion and morality were indispensable to the maintenance of the American Republic. While the constitutional law of liberty allowed Americans complete freedom to do as they pleased, religion prevented them from doing that which is immoral and unjust. Tocqueville surmised liberty could not be governed apart from religious faith, lest there be anarchy. America's founders knew that the Constitution allows humans tremendous freedoms, so there must be some kind of restraint to prevent lawlessness. That restraint is religion and morality. And again, you've got to take it further back even than just the founding fathers, and they were a lot closer to God's definition of morality. But still, what made America great, as it's covered in this issue of the Trumpet magazine, it gets all the way back. You've got to go back thousands of years. Mr. Fleury says, today those restraints have been largely cast aside in American society. If the founders were correct that these restraints were indispensable to our national survival, then this has grave implications for America's future. The abysmal state of America's character, its religion and morality, is putting the nation's survival in grave danger. This administration that talks so much, that says religion is hot, God is back, and the example President Trump gave after making that statement was, remember how they didn't want you to say Merry Christmas? Well, we say Merry Christmas now. And just ignore the morality of the people in this administration because it's a Christian revival. Mr. Fleury says, Tocqueville wrote, any free society founded on liberty, yet without a sacred moral code to govern the actions of individuals, cannot stand. Look at the embarrassing spectacle in America today, and you have to say that it proves Tocqueville right. If there's a code, it means there's a right and a wrong way. And we have every man doing what's right in his own ways. We have every man doing a way that seems right. Proverbs 14:12. A way that seems right to them, But the Bible, what God says, that way leads to death. We have to go to God's law. Here's another clip from President Trump at that Faith and Freedom Coalition, clip 6.
Everyone's doing well. We have a country that's just the hottest. It just is so hot. And I'm working really hard to make it even better. We're going to get rid of some of the flaws. We're going to make it even better. But the biggest thing we have to do is we have to stop this horrible thread of cancer that's permeating our country called communism. We have to stop it because that's what it's about. That's what they want to do quietly. And we ask that God will continue to bless the United States of America, and God will bless the United States of America because of people like you.
We ask that God will continue to bless America. He's right in fighting the communist left. But is this solution, is the cure going to end up being worse than the disease? How much is this nation really turning to God? Again, like I said, and we've covered it on past programs, you look at even just some of the officials in the Trump administration. You look at what this administration celebrates. They're not asking, well, is there a Bible reason for what we do? Here's another clip from, well, I can just skip this one. He talks about, again, fighting back against communism. And basically the answer just being religion of any kind. Just talk about Christ. Just say God's name. I mean, it's so much like the first Jeroboam. He just had to set up his own version of religion to keep the people from going astray. And basically it was whatever, I think it says it in 1 Kings 12, you know, he just did what was right in his heart. Or he set up these days according to his heart. This is an article at PJ Media. World Cup tourists see what too many Americans have forgotten. And the angle of this is right. I mean, we need to see how blessed we are. We need to be grateful for how blessed we are to live in the nations that we live in, to be beneficiaries of these promises of Abraham. But we also have to see beyond that. Well, why did Abraham receive that promise? Well, he received it because he obeyed. He did what God said to do. This article says, Americans are routinely told that our nation is hopelessly divided, irredeemably flawed, and perhaps even in terminal decline. Public polling reflects this pervasive frustration, pessimism, and I don't know that word. If someone halfway around the world only followed the polls, he might be forgiven for believing our republic is all but over. And this is kind of the thrust now of the whole right is, well, don't be, what did Trump call them, panickins or whatever it is. Stop panicking. We need to be positive. We need to talk about all the good. And there, like I said, I'm not going to keep saying it and putting the qualifier on it. We have to be thankful for these great blessings, but we've got to be straightforward and honest with ourselves that things are not improving fundamentally. There can be a brief resurgence, but even just you look at the debt, that's not getting fixed. It's not talked about. This article goes on, but something remarkable is happening during the 2026 World Cup, which is jointly hosted by America, Canada, and Mexico. Fans from all across the world have arrived in America, and they are absolutely loving it. We too often take our way of life for granted, but many soccer tourists now here cannot stop marveling at what they see. And later on, he says, our republic was founded on the biblically rooted proposition that human beings possess God-given rights, and that legitimate government exists to secure those rights and advance the common good. In other words, America is great because America is good. Not perfect, not above reproach, but fundamentally good. Fundamentally good. Again, well, how is that defined? And then you see a lot of people that they'll get back to, well, human nature is good. You get back to the clip we played earlier where, well, I think the people are so nice because they're so prosperous. They're so wealthy. We do need to acknowledge that these are blessings. We need to see where the blessings come from, and we need to obey the one who provides those blessings. Here's another clip from President Trump at the Faith and Freedom Coalition, clip 3.
I know he's ready, but I'm going to give him a proper introduction, because this man, our next speaker, is no stranger to this conference or this stage. In fact, today...
I didn't mean to play that clip. That was the person introducing him. It goes on for like 3 minutes, and he just talks about how great President Trump is. But he talks about how the radical left attacked him, and then he says it all failed because God has a purpose for this man, and it is to save our nation. Like we've said, God used Jeroboam to save America temporarily. There is this resurgence to give America one last chance to repent, but a lot of people, well, they're looking to Donald Trump. I mean, the tone of, maybe I should have played it, it was pretty long, but the tone of it was like, this is all Trump's doing. This is all King Jeroboam. But then what is America or you know, the fundamentals, the foundation is off. People aren't making those changes. And you look at just how many people were just turned so inward, ignoring the rest of the world. We'll let them deal with their own problems, and America can just be great by itself on this island over here. You look at what's happening in Germany, as we've said on this show, that should be the number one story. That should be what alarms people in America most, is that rising superpower. When Germany is rising, well, that means something's wrong in the United States. But President Trump, he just encourages them along, wants them to rebuild, wants them to become a superpower. And they have their own struggles there. This is an article from the European Conservative. Germany's perfect storm of social decline. And this is what should alarm the United States. This is Nicholas Frank, when we had him on the show nearly 10 years ago now, he said that the Germans will be fine as long as they're prosperous, as long as their economy is working. And then he said, if that stops, well, there's another German inside, and they will turn. And this should frighten the United States. And it should frighten the United States because, well, it fulfills Bible prophecy. What is God trying to get us to do? How does he want us to respond? Ultimately, these are all good things because it leads to the return of Jesus Christ. But as the individual, you've got to look at these events and look at the trumpet, look at what Mr. Armstrong said, and know where God is working. This article says, all this political suppression is taking place over the heads of a population whose ability to feed themselves is being continuously eroded by Germany's stagnant economy. They talk about how the politicians are just totally out of touch, and it's probably beyond that. They're actually trying to cause a problem in order to bring the solution, or to step in as the heroes, or whatever it is, or to cause chaos. I mean, some of these problems are so easy to solve. It's shocking that they can happen. But they're talking about just with the immigration, letting in so many Muslim immigrants, and then trying to force this cultural compromise so that we can make them feel welcome. This article goes on, the ongoing deindustrialization of the country gradually robs growing segments of the working class of well-paying jobs. At the same time, unchecked criminal activity creeps increasingly closer to the coveted privacy of a family's home and everyday life. Many in Europe, they're on edge. There's a lot there. Well, there have been a lot of things that have happened that should be a tipping point for people. But again, that solution or that cure is going to end up being worse. The compounding effects of persistently deteriorating economic conditions and increasingly invasive crime call for an outlet, a reaction, a strong and stern expression of public opinion. It calls for fundamental change to a political system that is failing its own people, one that would permit the very opinions that are banned, persecuted, and criminalized by the German government. They want a solution. They want someone that's going to come in by flatteries and solve this problem for them, even if it means, you know, doing it outside of the set-up system, doing it outside of democracy. This article says, in short, everyday life in Germany has become a pressure cooker. The question is when that pressure cooker is going to blow. The question is when that pressure cooker is going to blow up and what forms that explosion will take. So far, the nation's political elite has shown absolutely no interest in relenting. If anything, increasingly hardline political persecution will continue to lead Germany into the dark realm of tyranny. Daniel 11 talks about this strong leader who comes in by flatteries. Habakkuk 1 verse 11 talks about him having a mind change. You could see Germany in, as a whole kind of having a mind change. Jeremiah 1 verse 13 talks about this power in the north as a seething pot. And as Mr. Fleury has written in the New Throne book, that Jeremiah, he's receiving that vision and God says, well, what do you see? Do you see it? Do you see the seething pot? You can celebrate people coming over from Germany and just standing in awe of a 7-Eleven or a Walmart and think, they love us now. It's the gap, it's bridged. We've healed. Our nations get along because we have prosperity now. And not seeing the seething pot. Mr. Armstrong talked about the economic crisis that triggers the formation of a united Europe. And it will take a bit more, as Newsmax had an article about Germany's military recruitment and how they're trying to get people to sign up for the military and really nobody wants to do it. Again, when times are good, relatively speaking, and there's not a lot of motivation for that, Newsmax says, now Germany is weighing the return of compulsory military service after a voluntary recruitment initiative produced far fewer enlistments than military planners had hoped, raising fresh questions about Berlin's ambitious defense expansion plans amid heightened tensions with Russia. So there's a lot of different angles you could take to that story about just using Russia as a pretext to rearm, and then the fact that the populace aren't actually as fearful of it as you would be led to believe. But when that economic crisis occurs and that seething pot starts to boil over, I mean, the United States is going to look silly. I mean, there's other prophecies that talk about, you know, the world just mocking America, laughing at America, because we're over here talking about, well, the sports are the fabric of America, and we've got free refills and two-car garages, and this is what makes a nation great. This is an article from Reuters. Volkswagen weighs up to 100,000 job cuts, 4 plant closures, and biggest overhaul yet, sources say. So this economic crisis is coming, and this is like the iconic German car manufacturer. And this article points out that, well, it's kind of going the way of GM back in 2009 when they had to file for bankruptcy. And this hurts German prestige. It puts tens of thousands of people out of work potentially. Volkswagen is considering shutting 4 German factories and ramping up job cuts to as many as 100,000 people. Again, like Nicholas Frank said, it's fine when they're working, when the economic prosperity is there. But when those things start disappearing, America should be taking note. You look at how these events are perceived. Well, America's having this big resurgence, and it's hollow. Just taking the debt, for example, but more so if you look at, well, what is your definition of religion? And then you look at Germany, they're struggling and they're a seething pot, and America misses it because we just want to celebrate. We want to talk about America being back. I want to conclude today's show playing a section of the the documentary on the United States and Britain in prophecy, this one talks about the promises given to Abraham and how he obeyed God and God made those promises unconditional. Tremendous documentary if you've got time to go through all of it, based on Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. But these are the things that you have to go back and study and learn and know that make the current world make sense. You need the Bible. You need Bible prophecy. Request this Trumpet magazine. Subscribe to the Trumpet if you haven't. Read The United States and Britain in Prophecy to make sense of these events. And then remember what it is all leading to. It is leading to the return of Christ. There is tremendous hope in all of these events. We'll conclude today's show again with, this is actually part three. If you want to watch these sections, you can go to the Trumpet Daily YouTube channel, and there's a playlist there for the United States and Britain in Prophecy. You can watch the whole documentary there, or you can just watch these sections of it on demand. So thank you very much for joining us on today's show, and we will see you again tomorrow.
The Bible starts with the recreation of the surface of the earth. The first pages of the book state that God prepared the earth and then created the first human being. But this man rejected his creator. Then the Bible summarizes 2,000 years of human history. All of this in 11 chapters. 11 chapters. So what are the other 1,178 chapters about? What is the other 99% of the Bible about? Israel. One people, one nation, Israel. Have you ever thought about that? This extraordinary book is read by billions of people across all nations. But it isn't about all nations. It's about one nation. It is written by Israelites, about the God of the Israelites. In fact, the Bible ignores all other nations and empires except when they encounter Israel. And this Israelite book has been the single greatest influence on America, Britain, and the rest of the English-speaking world. Isn't that strange? Why do Americans and British and others read this book? Why do they use Israel's Bible? Why have generations and generations of British and Americans believed that the one true God is the God of Israel? Let's see what the Bible says. At the end of chapter 11, the world through 2,000 years of history stops on a dime to focus on the life of one man, Abraham. The rest of Genesis and the rest of the other 65 books of the Bible are about the descendants of Abraham and the God of Abraham. The Bible says God used this man to start a new plan for mankind, a plan involving a special nation. So, what does the record say about this man? Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show you. Some evidence indicates Abraham was a prince and had much to lose. Yet this was his response. So Abram departed as the Eternal had spoken unto him. Abraham's life was marked by obedience. Obedience to this God. And it was marked by something else. Promises. Promises from this same God. Very intriguing, very specific promises. When Christians think of what God promised Abraham, they normally think of one promise. In you shall all families of the earth be blessed. That happened. Well-documented history shows that almost 2,000 years later, Jesus was born, a direct descendant of Abraham. And he brought a message of hope for all families on earth. Christians believe not only that Jesus existed, but that he was the Christ, the Son of God. They believe that promise was real, and they believe that promise was kept. But what about the other promises? This God of the Bible made many other astounding promises to Abraham. In the same chapters that God promised a Savior, in the very same sentences, he also gave other promises. I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. I will bless them that bless you and curse them that curse you. All the land that you see, to you will I give it, and to your seed forever. I will make your seed as the dust of the earth. He that shall come forth out of your own bowels shall be your heir. Look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if you be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall your seed be. These are not spiritual promises. They are not about salvation. Their purpose is something else. These are promises about children, about descendants, about nations, about land, about greatness. Are these promises about local greatness, ancient greatness, long gone greatness? Or are they about something beyond that? Keep reading. There are more promises. I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. Thou shalt be a father of many nations, and I will make you exceeding fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings shall come out of you. These are not spiritual promises. They are physical promises, and they are major physical promises. Exceedingly large populations, multiple nations, multiple kings. But there was a condition. God promised to use Abraham in this way if he obeyed him. Then he put Abraham to the test and told him to sacrifice his son. This foreshadowed one of the most important events ever to occur in history. God the Father sacrificing Jesus Christ. And Abraham did it. He obeyed that command, right up to the point of picking up the knife. Then God stopped him. Abraham had shown he would obey God no matter what. And in response to Abraham's obedience, God said this, "In blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your seed, as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore." The Bible says Abraham met the condition, and now God would grant all these physical promises to his descendants unconditionally. But the promises still didn't stop there. Later, God added more major promises and some specific and intriguing details. He made these additional promises to Abraham, his son Isaac, and Isaac's son Jacob. Notice how specific these promises are. In the same sentence, promising the coming of Jesus Christ, God also says, "Your seed shall possess the gate of his enemies." Later, Abraham's son Isaac passed on the blessing from his father to his son and said, "Your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you will spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south." Later, God spoke to Jacob and changed his name. His new name was Israel. God promised Israel would father many descendants, including a nation and a company of nations. Why the detail? Why the specifics? What is the purpose of these promises? Why did God promise national greatness? The Bible records a spiritual promise God made to Abraham, but it also records numerous other promises, major, detailed, physical promises. Abraham's descendants would multiply like the stars. They would become multiple nations. They would spread west, east, north, and south. They would inherit a specific territory. They would be kings. Their allies would succeed. Their enemies would fail. They would control the gates of their enemies, and they would become a nation and a company of nations. Abraham's descendants did become a nation, ancient Israel. But were these promises fulfilled in ancient Israel? Or in the Jews? Or in the church? Or in Jesus Christ? No. So what happened to these promises? Did they fail? Is there really a God who made these promises to Abraham and his descendants? And did God keep them?